Hello and welcome to a new edition of Full Access Hoops and OTG Basketball Podcast. Be sure to head to otgbasketball.com for the latest and greatest NBA content out there. We are moving along to through the 2019-2020 NBA season. We are in, week three, I believe, now. A lot of basketball has happened. A lot of craziness has ensued the last couple weeks. And with me to break it all down, as usual, is Jay Christian. Jay, how's it going, brother?
Hey, look at us.
Huh? Who would have thought? Huh? Who would have
thought? Not me.
That has got to be the best meme on the internet right now.
It's winning, man. It's winning. Man,
any scenario that you need is a prime. What did I see? I think I saw the other day. It was Draymond Green. And like the tweet was like Steve Kerr. I should use it on the Pacific pod that we just did, but it was Steve Kerr and Draymond Green, and it was like when you realize Draymond Green has to take 25 shots per game, and it's like, hey, who would have thought? Not me. But here we are, the NBA season. Man, it's been fun. We had a lot go on this week. I think the one thing that we both wanted to talk about, at least you tweeted on it, I think we should start there. Kobe Altman from the Cleveland Cavaliers, their GM, received an extension today. You had tweeted about how you didn't feel like this was a big enough talking point. So I want to give you the stage right now. What do you think about the Cleveland Cavaliers extending Kobe Altman?
So it's huge, right? When you think about, you know, that Dan Gilbert wasn't willing to extend David Griffin, who I think is in the running, at least for executive of the year for this year, right? Just sort of is highly regarded and well thought of. I think when Kobe Altman first got the position, I think he was a lesser known commodity outside of maybe Cleveland and some NBA circles. And so I honestly didn't think he would last very long. I thought he was just sort of the sort of stopgap after David Griffin had, you know, parted ways with Dan Gilbert and the Cleveland Cavaliers. But I think he's done a decent job. I think the Cavs are still got some issues, obviously, the roster, and probably a little bit of, you know, cap constraints from the LeBron James years. But they still have Kevin Love, still have Tristan Thompson, who are both playing really well so far this season. The young guys, I'm high on Sexton, probably more than most, I would say. And then I think they hit the higher out of the park with John Beilein, former University of Michigan coach. So Altman has built a steady track record in his role as GM of the Cavaliers. And I think this is the first time Gilbert has ever extended a GM. So just that in itself, it's kind of like with Steph when he went undefeated, right? Or undefeated, was unanimous MVP, that he was the first. Now, certainly there are people that were worthy of that distinction before him, but the fact that he got it is pretty remarkable. I feel that same way in a similar vein with Altman. Certainly Griffin was probably due for an extension for his work with the Warriors, but, you know, for whatever reason, he didn't get it. And for Kobe Altman to have that sort of vote of confidence from Dan Gilbert, of all people, I think indicates that at least Gilbert feels that the Cavaliers are trending in the right direction in a very sort of, with the exception of probably the Pacers, who are still dinged up, obviously, you know, better than anybody, in a very sort of competitive division, right? I mean, the East, the Central Division is still going through a lot of like change and flux, and, you know, there's no clear favorite. I mean, you probably say the Pacers by default, but like I said, they're still trying to get their house in order. So I think Altman and Kobe Altman and the rest of the Cavs organization are content to sort of build this thing from the ground up with Coach Beilein and their young talent and maximizing the years with their veterans and Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson. But yeah, I think it's a huge deal. I think basketball fans should take notice that Dan Gilbert is actually sticking to a plan and seeing it through, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, as you kind of laid out, what the Cleveland Cavaliers have in place right now is all good. You have some nice young pieces on this roster. And I think the biggest question mark is, what do you do with guys like Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson? And even Jordan Clarkson, to a degree. I don't think Jordan Clarkson's locked into their plans. He's having a better year than most. His trade value is probably up. Kevin Love being probably the prime guy, if he stays healthy, that we see move to some team who thinks they're a piece away, or a team that is a piece away to go after Kevin Love. I think Tristan Thompson, too, is a guy we could see moved if a team's looking for a guy who can give you double-doubles starting or off the bench. He's obviously still a very good center. And as we've seen the cap go up and contracts go a little bit out of whack, Tristan Thompson's pretty big deal a couple of years ago isn't that big anymore.
Right.
It's almost friendly at that point in time. So how he maneuvers those veterans and what assets and young guys he's able to bring in, I think even will grow on the Altman plan going forward, post-LeBron James, post-Kyrie Irving. But it's been a good couple of years. As you mentioned, they've been steady so far this year. The Pacers did defeat them the other night, which I was extremely happy about. We got our asses kicked earlier this season. Again, the Pacers only play Central Division teams. We play.
I'm about to say another Central Division contest. Yes.
Yeah, we played the Bulls last night too. So the Pacers have played only Central Division games outside of their matchup with the Brooklyn Nets. But yeah, it's definitely a promising outlook for the Cleveland Cavaliers so far this year. And Altman deserves a lot of credit.
Yep, I agree.
And I think we should just run down the division real quick. I gotta mention it. The Pacers have won 3 games in a row. I was saying fire Nick McMillan on this podcast just a week ago.
About a week ago.
But we have changed our tune.
Have we changed our tune?
Even though I don't think he's a great offensive-minded coach still, this was an impressive win last night against the Chicago Bulls. Again, Zach Lowe, who I respect a great deal and is a fantastic basketball mind, he had the Chicago Bulls being the 8th seed, Pacers missing the playoffs. After what I saw last night, ain't no way that team's making the playoffs. The Pacers did not have Miles Turner, Victor Oladipo, Domantas Sabonis, or Edmund Sumner. We had to start our 19-year-old rookie, Goga Bitsdale. We had to play TJ Leaf major minutes. And TJ Leaf going against Lauri Markkanen, Thaddeus Young, had 12 points and 13 rebounds. That guy is a scrub, okay? He had a great game, but their scrubs can have good games. And that was a scrub who had a very good game. Promising for the Pacers, who have some injuries. They had to start Jakar Sampson as well. So they have to roll out a lot of guys who ideally are not going to be playing major minutes once guys are healthy. And they got to win. Now 3 straight wins. Malcolm Brogdon was an absolute steal once again this offseason. Why the Milwaukee Bucks? Or if anyone out there thinks Eric Bledsoe is better than Malcolm Brogdon, you don't know basketball. Sorry, I take the guy who can shoot and facilitate and play defense over the guy who plays defense and can't do anything else. But yes, the Pacers have once again brought an inner light out of me. I am at peace. Utopia is my life now. It's been a good week since a very bad first week.
Since you tried to fire him literally a week ago. Yeah, I still think so. It's funny because we joke about the Pacers, and I put this on Twitter, and I kid you, but you're right. Like, outside of the Brooklyn game, the Pacers literally only played Central Division games. And I think this will help them. Now, I think it's fair to say, even if you account for the Victor Oladipo absence, you know, if you factor that into your equation, I think you still would say the Pacers are probably off to a little slower start than they probably wanted to be. 3-3 right now, I think 7th in the division, or in the conference, excuse me. But I think the Central Division is sort of what we alluded to with Cleveland a second ago. It's still winnable for them, right? Even with them playing guys that, you know, you couldn't pick out of a lineup if you saw them like at the, you know, post office or whatever. I think that will help the Pacers as they sort of get right. I think Brogdon has been a very bright spot. I think Sabonis is looking every bit like the guy who could probably win a most improved. I think those have been 2 bright spots. I think offensively, Nate's still not very creative, I would say. And a lot of that is amazing how creative you get once you have Victor Oladipo running your offense. So those things change. So I'll give him a break on that. But I agree, it's a fair criticism of Nate McMillan, who's never really been an offense guy and is still trying to run an offense from, you know, the early 90s, I would argue. I think those are bright spots for them. And the division, like I say, it's still winnable, you know. Well, sorry, not winnable because of Milwaukee, but for the rest of the division, I you know, the other guys are elbowing position with the Detroit Pistons, Chicago Bulls. Oh, my God, I agree with you. I think that is a dumpster fire. You know, I think the Pacers have some room to improve, obviously. But the division games will actually save them, I think, over the next few months as they sort of integrate everyone into the fold, as they wait for Victor Oladipo's return. So I think it's a slow start for them, but I don't think the house is on fire just yet. And hopefully not, because it's only been six games, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. You know, and also I want to say the shout out about Malcolm Brogdon. Only one other player currently has over 100 points and 50 assists so far this season. That's LeBron James. Malcolm Brogdon is number two in that statistic.
Good company.
Very good company. So yeah, the Pacers are in a good spot. I think once they start to get healthy, it'd be easier to see where this team is at. And also, I will say, it still kind of feels like Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis can't coexist because the Pacers started winning the minute Miles Turner got hurt, and they started playing Sabonis at center. So it does feel like, once again, you're going to have to choose probably between Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis. Sabonis can play a small ball five because he's a little bit undersized at the center position. You do lose a little bit of defense with him, but he gives you great pick and roll offense, fantastic rebounding. And then Miles Turner obviously gives you rim protection and some good perimeter shooting. Both those guys have pieces that the other guy lacks. But I don't think those two guys can coexist in a starting lineup, which then brings up the question of maybe Goga Bitsdale, the rookie, if he can show that he can be some sort of a rim protector. He did have four blocks last night and like 20 minutes off the in the starting lineup. So if he can prove to be a solid backup rim protector, maybe that opens up the door for Miles Turner to be traded. I'm not so sure I'm ready to have that conversation. But I think there are some cracks in the Sabonis Turner pairing already.
Oh, well, let's stay on that for a second. And you were saying, okay, so when Turner's out and Sabonis is there at the five, now this is going to be a stretch on two fronts, right? Because you found something offensively that's working, or just in general. I mean, but offensively specifically, you found something that's working for you with Sabonis at the five. I can see it. It's a very sort of new age basketball way to play. Does Coach McMillan have the gumption, we'll say, to keep playing that way? Because that's a very sort of small ball, 8 seconds or less, new age basketball way to play it with Sabonis at the five. I agree. I think it's working, particularly offensively. And I think that's probably their best lineup to get points. But do you think Nate McMillan has the guts to keep it that way? And then two, if you trade you trade Miles Turner, what kind of help are you looking for? What are you trying to get back in return in terms of complementing the roster?
That's a good question. So the backcourt I'm cool with, right? Brogdon and Victor Oladipo, that's got to be going forward.
That's fine.
Jeremy Lamb, since he's been back, has been awesome. You know, he's more of a bench player, though. TJ Warren's a little bit too much. I probably would look for a 3 and D wing would be the ideal guy. So maybe you take Miles Turner and you look at a team like the Boston Celtics. Looking for a center, obviously they're rolling out Enes Kanter, Robert Williams, you know, guys that you really don't want to have during playoff time. And maybe Miles Turner kind of fits what they're doing better. And they have a galore of wings, you know, Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. I think Tatum's obviously off limits. I think you don't probably want Hayward, but maybe Jaylen Brown would be a guy, you know, a small forward wing. You can play defense, can maybe be a better 3-point shooter. I would also consider, maybe even Atlanta. They don't have a for sure center of the future with Alex Len. Maybe they see Miles Turner as some rim protection defense, can kind of follow their notion of shooting a lot of 3-pointers. I could see Houston maybe being slightly intrigued. But yeah, I think what you're looking for in return is 3-point shooting, because when you look at 3-point percentages in the NBA, the Pacers are still shooting one of the lower amounts per game at only 24 threes per game, and they are 23rd in percentage. So I think adding some 3-point shooting and a defensive-minded guy would probably be what you want ideally for Turner. Because again, if you're trading Turner, then Sabonis is your center, but Goga is the backup, and Goga can play a little bit more rim protecting on that court.
Well, it's definitely thinking outside the box. I don't know if I'm intrigued. I like it. I mean, I think you have to think if you're the Pacers, if we run up against a Joel Embiid slash Al Horford combination, more so Embiid than Horford. How are we going to defend? How are we going to play that? But I mean, I like it. I think it's outside the box. It may be a little too radical for some good Midwestern values, but I don't know. It seems awesome. I'm intrigued by this.
Yeah. I mean, So this was this actually just got tweeted 3 hours ago. So Goga Bitsdale, Domantas Sabonis shared the floor for 16 minutes last night against the Cleveland Cavaliers. They had an offensive rating of 120 and a defensive rating of 103, which is pretty damn good. Yep. I don't have the number to coexist what Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis looked like in their first matchup, but I can tell you that Kevin Love damn near had a triple-double when he was matched up with Sabonis earlier this season already.
Right. Yep.
So that'll be something to watch. Obviously, the Pacers, close to my heart, having a good week is promising. Have to see what it turns out this week. Not sure when Sabonis gets back. Now, another team which has had an interesting start to the season, a team that you were really high on going into the year, the Washington Wizards.
Yeah.
They had a slugfest Wednesday, and a 2K sliders all the way up 159 to 158 loss to the Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
You know, I want to say the first thing that's really caught my eye about the Washington Wizards is Isaiah Thomas looks like Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
Coming off the bench in some limited minutes, though they're not letting him go full tilt yet. But he looks the quickest I've seen him look, maybe even since like his first year in Boston. Looks quick, looks lean, is hitting pull-up threes, is getting guys involved. The defense, obviously, the guy's short. I don't know if people know this. He's kind of short. It kind of affects his ability to defend at a high degree. But he's been damn good. Beal, still Bradley Beal. Thomas Bryant has been solid. You've had some of these, you know, Mo Wagner, Isaac Bongo, some guys that the Lakers gave up on playing like big minutes and playing decent minutes. So what have been some of your thoughts on the Wizards team that you were really intrigued by going into the year?
Yes. So I too have been encouraged by the play of the young guys so far. I've really liked Thomas Bryant. I think Isaiah Thomas does look like Isaiah Thomas. I think that's very accurate. And it's good to see just from a guy who's been through a lot the last maybe four seasons or so. So as a sort of a human interest story, that's always cool, right? When a guy can come back and play. Markel Fultz in New Orlando comes to mind as another one of those stories. Just seeing a guy out there playing, regardless of the results. But to have him playing at a pretty high level right now in Isaiah Thomas is pretty cool, I will say. Maybe I overestimated. I mean, I was a little too optimistic on the Wizards. I mean, they're 1-4 right now. They did, played an NBA Jam version game against the Rockets last week. Sitting at 1-4, I think they're in the standings slightly ahead of the lowly New York Knicks. And I think this is kind of basically where you and Nick had them. It's early. They got, I think, the Pistons tonight. Then they do a bit of as part of a Central Division swing, you know, Pistons, Pacers, Cavs. I'm still intrigued. I'm still intrigued. The intrigue is there. The optimism, I will have to say, has probably waned a bit. Maybe you guys were probably a little closer to what reality will be for this team for this season, which is, you know, at the bottom or damn near. So I'm still intrigued because, you know, I'm a big fan of these. Like, how do we get this team from being a dumpster fire to being something really reputable? Those are always fascinating sort of stories to me. I probably have to temper my expectations just a little bit. Like 20 wins will be, I think, remarkable for this team right now, I will say. So, I mean, you know, they can't all be winners. What do you want from me, Corey?
Right. No. But again, this is a team, I think, as you mentioned, like they're probably not going to win a lot of games, but there is going to, I mean, if they're going to score 158 points, though, for example, with this kind of roster, I mean, that's some, okay, I'll say this. They may not be good, right? But if they're having this kind of scoring output, we're seeing guys like this score, this will be a team that a lot of people start calling to try and pick apart trade-wise, right? Like, yes. I think the only guys you can't trade, obviously Bradley Beal signing his extension. He is unable to be traded until next year. So those trade talks are dead. I think Thomas Bryant is a guy who's young enough that you're going to keep at least for the foreseeable future until John Wall gets back, to see maybe if you have a big three in Wall, Beal, and Bryant. But I think guys like Isaiah Thomas, like he would be, to me, the number one guy I could see move this year, right? Someone, right. A proven veteran who, if he looks healthy and he's back on track, somebody could use that bench scoring off the bench. Exactly. You know, and maybe even, you know, a weird place perhaps because they already have kind of a lot of guards, but maybe if a team like the Los Angeles Clippers, right? We mentioned on our West Coast version of this podcast how they may need or they're lacking a playmaking facilitator. If Isaiah Thomas can average, you know, 10 or no, 8 assists per game with the Wizards, I think on that roster where he can also be hidden defensively, he may be able to get some offense going for that team. I'm not saying that's the ideal fit, but I think Isaiah Thomas would be a guy I expect to see moved if he keeps up this production and remains healthy.
Yeah, and that would be, I mean, and in a situation where he could really help a team out. I mean, Clippers is a great destination. You know, I could even see one that's sort of out of the box is somewhere in Texas, either with the Mavericks or the Spurs. I think just sort of offensive punch for both of those teams would be an interesting fit for him as well, just depending on how this...
Not to cut you off, the plus for him, too, is his contract is the veteran minimum. So it's not like you're...
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to give up too much. Probably a draft pick and a young asset with a contract that matches probably gets a deal done.
Exactly. I agree.
Yeah, so that'll be an interesting team to watch going forward because of trade assets. Keeping in the Eastern Conference, we'll do West on the back half of this pod. The Miami Heat.
Mm.
They look hot. I know our boys from Heater's Gonna Heat, Jorge, Kyle, and Rich. I know they're having an enjoyable time watching this team to start the year. Justice Winslow has missed some time due to injury, but it really hasn't mattered. Kendrick Nunn is all about his business. Maybe it's none of our business. None of your business. Trying to make some kind of pun there. Deion Waiters, we haven't seen yet, which is interesting, but I think that's more of a product because of the young guys and Tyler Herro, Duncan Robinson playing such big roles at the two guard and Goran Dragic being healthy, that Deion Waiters just the odd man out. We kind of mentioned before the season started, this team had a lot of guards on the roster. And then Jimmy Butler, you know, Jimmy Butler is a kind of a polarizing guy, right? So there's the ego that comes with it. We know what he did to the Minnesota Timberwolves, where he pretty much took the third stringers and beat the shit out of the starters to prove a point. We know that he was gritty in Philly, but wanted his own team. Miami Heat just have the identity that coincides with Jimmy Butler. Play hard. Do whatever it takes to win. It's not about me. He hasn't been the lead scorer for this team on any single night yet this season. I know last night he had 17 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists, 4 steals, 1 block. Like, he's just in the perfect atmosphere to play the clear-cut, I'm the second best guy on the team role. And with that said, I don't think he can still be the best guy on the team. I think this is a clear-cut number two guy. I still think they need a dominant offensive force or scoring, like a guy like Bradley Beal, for this team to take the next step. But I think as of right now, they have a very good collective team with a lot of depth that just really fits Jimmy Butler's style of play. And, of course, Eric Spoelstra, once again, proving that he's an elite head coach.
I think that, you know, one, with Coach Spoelstra, that he's not in more Coach of the Year conversations is amazing to me. And it lets you know that sometimes that award is kind of a popularity contest. You know, Spo was probably getting more of that love when he was going to the finals with the Big Three and the Heatles back in the LeBron, D-Wade, Chris Bosh days. But what he's done subsequent to that time has been nothing short of remarkable. You make this point about Jimmy Butler fitting in with Miami Heat, the DNA and the culture of the Heat. That's been infused with Pat Riley for the last 25 years. So it makes sense that Jimmy Butler vibes with Pat Riley. There are stories of Pat Riley when he was a head coach having giant tubs of ice buckets in his locker room and dunking his head in there before games to fire his team up. The guy that does that is a guy that appeals to the same guy that takes the scrubs in a practice game and kicks the shit out of the first team. Those guys are cut from the same cloth, right? And just mentally tough guys. You know, when Jimmy Butler, you know, secured the bag with Miami, it was like, oh, well, we thought you wanted to win, Jimmy. Why are you in the Miami Heat, which is clearly in rebuild mode? You know, something we talked about on another pod, the way the Miami organization is set up, I don't think they're ever really in this full tank rebuild mode. I think the culture's in place to where you know, hard-nosed guys can come in and compete, and Miami, you know, will always sort of stay afloat and until Pat Riley and Mickey Arison hit big again on free agents. And I think they have with Jimmy Butler. I think the atmosphere, the approach, the DNA of this franchise fits Jimmy Butler so well. I think Philly was another place like that, just based on the fans and everything. I thought Jimmy Butler was a great fit as a 76er, but I also think it works really well in Miami, just sort of how they play basketball on the court. You know, the D-Wade, LeBron James days, that was definitely, you know, Heatles sort of glam rock for the Miami Heat. But since Pat Riley's been there, since like 95, majority of that history has been hard-nosed guys. It's been Tim Hardaway. It's been PJ Brown, you know, Dan Marley. It's been just tough dudes, Udonis Haslam. You know, there was a Hollywood period for a while there with the big three. But for the most part, Miami Heat history, since Pat Riley's been there, is just hard-nosed, tough, gritty guys that are, you know, coming, you know, to the knife fight ready to do battle. And I think that fits Jimmy Butler to a T. And I think that's why you see Miami Heat having such success early on in the season.
Yeah, I would agree. And of course, we haven't really seen Justice Winslow yet, which I think is only going to bolster this team. Bam Adebayo has proven why they got rid of Whiteside. A dynamic center can do a little bit of everything. Also, kind of looks like Dwight Howard in the face. Just want to say that. this is definitely an intriguing team, which I think if they wanted to, they could definitely still make a move. I don't think making a move for Chris Paul would be a good idea, which I know that's been a linked guy. There's been rumblings about maybe Kyle Lowry if he became available. I think ideally, if you're the Miami Heat, roll out with this roster and Jimmy Butler until you can add a clear-cut guy who's better than Jimmy Butler, or at least at the same level as Jimmy Butler.
Right.
I think Goran Dragic could be a guy too we see moved. If Deion Waiters gets any time, maybe he gets moved because he was in crazy good shape going into the year. Pat Riley, once again, like you said, they're never really tanking. They just do these soft retools that they're still competitive. And then they start making moves. Pat Riley does it again. And Jimmy Butler even named his first daughter, that's a weird thing to say, Riley.
I saw that and I couldn't remember what the name was, but I saw that story. Yeah, that's, Pat Riley helped facilitate his daughter or her kids or her grandkids never have to worry about money. So I think that's the least Jimmy Butler could do is name her Riley. So, but it's funny you said, so I wonder now they're sitting second in the Eastern Conference. I think we think Miami will probably come back to earth a little bit, but maybe not too much.
I said this last night. So I think as of right now, I'm almost all in on Miami being one of the playoff or home court playoff teams in the East. I don't know if they're third or fourth. I think the Bucks and Sixers are my locks. But I think as of right now, like I'm all in on Miami being a third or fourth team. They're mixed between veterans and depth. I think this team is a lock to be a three or four, especially with how we've seen the Nets and Pacers stumble out of the gate. Orlando hasn't looked so good. Celtics are... they're steady. I think they've been solid, but they still have some holes on the roster. I think when I'm looking at team that roster constructed in the Eastern Conference, the Miami Heat are the third most confident team team that I'm most confident in.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think just to your point about making a move, I wonder if they get to the trade deadline and they're sitting, 2-3, 3-4, and they say, look, we've played the Bucks to a draw this year. We played Philly to a draw. Maybe there's a move to be made that we kind of push it all in. And I think Pat Riley is that kind of guy. I mean, I think if he thinks the team is there at a spot, like you say, definitely if they're competing for a home playoff series, top four. I think Pat Riley starts checking, working the phones and seeing if there's a move that can be made. I also agree with you. And I think Miami's been fairly disciplined. I say that, but they gave Whiteside all that money. For the most part, they were disciplined about moving assets. I agree with you. If there's a move to be had, I think it has to be someone at Jimmy's level or higher, right? And I think Jimmy's cut from the Chris Paul, Kobe Bryant cloth in that. And I think this is what he was trying to get out of Minnesota with Kat and Andrew Wiggins. Hey, if you're the guy, quote unquote, then be the guy. Put me in my place. And I'll, you know, if you can show me you can lead, then I'll get out of the way. I think that's how Jimmy Butler is. Now, he may seem cantankerous to people because, you know, sort of these, you know, sort of new dude NBA players don't want the smoke and don't want that conflict. But I think Jimmy, you know, if someone rolls in and is like an alpha, I think Jimmy considers himself an alpha as well. But, you know, if someone the caliber of, you know, his peer or higher, I think Jimmy Butler has no problem following in line and just trying to get W. So if there's a move to be had, I could see Jimmy Butler being in the fold and making it work, you know, to the best of his capabilities.
Definitely. I just think if they make any move, it's got to be a guy who they can rely on scoring.
Sure. I think that's right.
You know, and I also think if you want to go like young, I just thought of this, not to bring up the Warriors again, but like D'Angelo Russell, maybe they go for a young point guard. I don't think they need a point guard because they have Kendrick Nunn. And also, I think defensively, you'd rather have a guy who plays more defense than D'Lo. But that would be a guy offensively with this kind of team where you may even get the best out of D'Lo.
Right.
But again, I don't think that's a guy, like you mentioned, the leadership thing. That's not going to be a guy who tells Jimmy Butler to shut the fuck up.
Right, which, right.
You know, I'm not sure how many guys there are in the league who will do that to start with. But yeah, Miami will be an interesting team, especially if they keep up this play. Because as we know, you know, Pat Riley made that trade back in the day for Shaquille O'Neal. You know, has never been scared of doing what he can to bolster talent and roster.
Sure.
So that'd be a guy to watch. Now, moving on to another interesting storyline from this week. We had a brawl.
Yes.
Between the Philadelphia 76ers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I think the brawl wasn't even the best part of the night. I think it was the social media activity following the game where you had Joel Embiid saying, I was raised by lions. Yes. You know, and a cat tried to fuck with me. Right. And then Karl Anthony Towns, you know, went back at him saying, you know, with like the abbreviated cap and a bunch of clown emojis saying, yeah, I was raised by lions, and shows the fact that he kind of had the upper hand on Embiid for much of that little brawl and the fact that Embiid has cried in the past, to which Embiid responded to the comment and said, bro, I know all about you, and even tagged Jimmy Butler in it and said, I know all about you, man. Jimmy Butler told me that you're soft. Like, I don't need anything. Right. And even Jimmy Butler before the last game said, man, the minute I saw that fight, I knew I was going to be dragged into it. He was like, I just knew I knew Joel was going to suck me into it.
Right.
Surprisingly enough, though, Towns and Embiid only served 2 games suspension, right, which I felt like could have been at least 5, especially because last year we saw Rondo and Chris Paul get in that little spat with Brandon Ingram, too. And all those guys received 5 or more games suspension. And these guys only got 2. And then, of course, there was the Ben Simmons peacemaker, who was really just like a chokehold. It was
crossface. It was like wrestling. I was like, what is this? Mandible
the
peacemaker
claw to choke you out. Yeah. So that was interesting.
Herb used to call his gun the peacemaker, just for context. So,
so, you know, interesting debacle. I kind of broke this down already on the NBA outlet. What were some of your thoughts and takeaways from the brawl that we saw?
Well, I mean, to quote a line from Charles Barkley, whenever there's a fight, he's like, in the NBA, he's like, here we have another 2 dudes that can't fight. You know, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, and to be clear, everyone involved in that could kick my ass, no problem. So it's all relative about can and cannot fight. Let me just put that out there. I'm not a tough guy and not going to pretend I am. So for the context of the NBA, I was really shocked that Ben Simmons did not get any time. I mean, Cat was tapping, which is what you would probably do if someone's got their forearm across your Adam's apple in the middle of a melee in this fight. I mean, it's almost involuntary, right? You would try to tap to, you know, try to breathe again. So that was weird. I was struck by the social media back and forth, and I was thinking, if this was the Pistons and the Bulls, I know we like to say, well, back then, but it's because they didn't have social media. I'm not, who's to say that Isaiah Thomas wouldn't have jumped on social media and talked trash about Scottie Pippen or Michael Jordan had it been available. I think Michael Jordan would have been one of the greatest Twitter trolls of all time had he had social media. I mean, the guy he got the, you know, who took his varsity spot, air quotes, Michael Jordan invited that guy to his Hall of Fame speech. So to think that Michael Jordan's petty wouldn't be on 1,000 if he had social media is absurd. But anyways, back to that fight. I thought social media thing was weird. I think it would have been a play on had there not been a social media component. I mean, I think the NBA has kind of cracked down a little on sort of the freewheeling social media back and forth of the NBA. I know like a couple of years ago, the Mavs Twitter account made a joke, or the Rockets made one about the Mavs, and it was like taking the horse out to pasture, like shot the horse, which was totally funny all through emojis, but NBA sort of cracked down on that. So I think the social media component of this fight between Cat and Joel Probably is what made the NBA say, okay, we probably got to get in there and react instead of just a fine and maybe some, you know, people getting ejected. Totally shocked by the Ben Simmons thing. I thought that was great that Joel came out and was like, first, I ain't no bitch. And I saw a statement from Elton Brand where he said, first and foremost, something, something. And someone retweeted that and said, it would have been great if Elton Brand would have come out and been like, first and foremost, we ain't no bitches. That would have been hilarious. But, yeah, man, I thought it was weird. I mean, Embiid is probably more of a but I don't really think of Embiid as a tough guy either, because I feel like when they're playing Golden State, he didn't want any of David West smoke. So Embiid's not stupid, right? I mean, I think he's talking trash to Cat because it's Cat. I mean, Embiid doesn't strike me as Artest or Rodman or whoever. Like I say, like he and David West were in each other's face, but he didn't want the smoke with David West last season. So he's not dumb. I mean, I think he's a bit of a studio gangster, but I don't think he wants it with people that are, you know, stay ready all stars, so to speak, to quote Bomani Jones. So I mean, it was all very hilarious to me, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Are you surprised by the light suspensions? Or I know some people have said, like, well, they're not going to, like, they don't want to mess up the Vegas lines because both these teams have, you know, over and under to hit, specifically the Philadelphia 76ers. Do you think that played a part in it?
Yeah, I think I don't know if it's the line so much. I really do think it's the social media part. I think if guys would have kept going back and forth and making it a thing, I think the NBA would have probably just let it be a play on and said, hey, you got ejected. Here's a fine for 10 grand. Let's keep it moving. I think the social media piece, I don't know so much about the line. I think it's more about, you know, just the back and forth in the social media. I really think that was the determining factor. Like if they'd have both gone to the postgame pressers and said, hey man, it happens sometimes. It is what it is. I think that would have been the end of it. Honestly, I think just the back and forth on Twitter is when the NBA said, okay, we probably got to look like we give a damn about this a little bit. And that's why the suspension came down. That's why they were so light, I think. Right. I mean, I think relative to what happened, I mean, I didn't think a one game was necessary. I don't know. I thought it was more social media forcing the NBA's hand than anything else.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Probably that sounds more likely. Sticking in the Western Conference after the Minnesota Timberwolves. I do want to give a shout out to our guy, Andrew Wiggins.
Yes.
For all the slander he has received over the years, especially from me and on this podcast, he has been extremely good this year. You know, has been effective from the field, is having clutch moments already this season. Against the Miami Heat in particular, he had like 11 points to end that game, with three of them being threes. It's nice to see Andrew Wiggins kind of coming into his own. Can he remain consistent will be the biggest question mark. But as of right now, it looks like Minnesota may be like a D'Angelo Russell piece away from being really good. And I'm happy with what I've seen so far from the Timberwolves. How have you felt about the Timberwolves?
A surprise, for sure. Like, and we've talked about a little bit on Full Access. I think this was last week. We were talking about guys that were sort of early out the gates that were surprising us. And Wiggins was the name that you brought up. And we had a discussion, about the Timberwolves, which is quite frankly, not something I thought we would be discussing. But they're playing well and Cat looks good. So far out the gates. And I think, particularly for their division, which I thought was going to be just murder's row. And of course, there's still plenty of time for that with Utah, Portland, Denver. You know, we never brought up, or at least I never even considered Minnesota being in that running. I thought they were hurt by not landing D'Angelo Russell. I thought that would have been a really big piece for them in sort of moving forward and turning the page from, you know, sort of Jimmy Butler and overall sort of mediocrity the last season or so. So this is a welcome surprise. I mean, they are talented. Like Wiggins is definitely overpaid, right? But he is talented. He's not a scrub. I mean, probably not as high as we projected him as a number one overall pick way back when, but he still has talent. Jeff Teague is still a very serviceable point guard. Karl Anthony Towns, you know, one of the top five, excuse me, at his position in the NBA. So on the one hand, we shouldn't be as surprised as we are that Minnesota's out of the blocks, out of the gates, performing well, winning games. Now, I'd be lying if I said I had them second in the Western Conference at any point during this season. So that is a surprise. But there's talent on that roster, right? They're not just, I mean, they're not, that's probably been the issue with them, right? Is that they do have so much talent right. and they've underachieved, right?
Right. I think the biggest issue is it's been Towns and who else, right?
Right.
There hasn't been a steady number two option for that team. Right. You know, and last year, you know, and they weren't that good last year, their steady number two option was probably Derrick Rose. Right. Which, you know, Derrick Rose is having a very good year off the bench. But again, that's a guy coming off the bench who doesn't play much defense. And if that's your second best player, your ceiling is already pretty evident. And I agree with you. Jeff Teague has been really good this year. He's definitely, you know, shooting like 50% from the field. Wiggins has been good. Robert Covington, just like the best type of 3-and-D player out there in a lot of ways. A guy who, you know, can yes. hit the three ball, plays really good defense. Him being like hurt Covington last year. Definitely missed them. Definitely missed him last year with him being hurt. But yeah, I think for Minnesota, it's more so can they have a clear-cut number two to play alongside Towns? And ideally, you want that to be Wiggins, as you mentioned. He's getting paid enough money to be that guy, but can it be him? Because I think their ceiling is a lot higher if you're getting Towns at the beast mode level he's been playing at, and then Wiggins as a solid, you know, 20-6 guy alongside of him.
Right. I agree. And I think, and that's it, right? And maybe that's the point, right? Is that, and there's an article I wrote way back when that will Karl Anthony Towns be the next sort of Minnesota player that's filling up the stat sheet, but not being surrounded with talent. We saw it with Kevin Garnett. I mean, he got one good season where they made the Western Conference Final, where they actually put people around him in 2004. Kevin Love was a double-double machine, but I think Minnesota never won more than like 39, 40 games when he was there. And I thought Towns at the time was still in that same trajectory. And maybe that's the point, right, to what you just said. Who is the next guy? Towns and who, right? I love Covington's game. I think he's great. I think he would do well on somewhere like the Los Angeles Lakers, for instance, right? That's some of the kind of guy they need. I like his game a lot. I think you're right. I think he's prototypical 3-and-D guy straight out of Central Casting. Maybe that's the equation that works, right? Who is the next guy besides Towns? We know Towns is a stud, but what else in terms of complimentary players, in terms of players that can fill that gap when Towns doesn't have it going, or when he's getting double and triple teamed, who can step up and provide that offensive punch and provide that complement to Towns' game in those positions? And it's so far, I mean, seems like Wiggins at this point in the season, I think.
Yeah, no, I would agree to this point in time for sure. Now, do you think, and this is like the last question we'll throw in the Minnesota Timberwolves, do you think this is a playoff team at this point in time? Like, do you think this is a flash in the pan? Generally, we have at least one or two teams which have a really good start and kind of head back to the medium. Is this right. The Timberwolves, or do you think it's a team that's going to hover around the playoffs for majority of the season?
So I think they'll hover. I think what will hurt them or what will make it tougher, and I'm just going to pull up the standings here. Got them second now. I think, and I'm just looking who's in. So Portland and Houston, if the playoffs started today, would be out. I think we both agree that will probably change more than likely for those two teams, right? They'll probably be in before it's all said and done, I would think. And then I think what will hurt Minnesota is the division, quite honestly. I think Utah, Denver, and Portland will settle in. And so going on those 2-3-game swings where you got to try to get Denver on a Tuesday and Utah on a Thursday and then, you know, finish up in Portland on a Saturday, those kind of swings will be tough, right? It's not the same as you know, like we were just talking about the Miami Heat, Miami trying to go like, you know, Charlotte to Washington to Atlanta. It's a different sort of vibe within the division. So I think that'll be tough. I think teams like Houston will figure it out, you know what I mean, and sort of start to nip and tuck at a playoff position. But looking at this, I think Minnesota will be in the fight. And we've seen years before where one day you're fifth in the West and the next day you're first, just depending on the standings are so close. So Minnesota could be playing that game for a couple months where, you know, one day they're second or third, next day they're ninth. Looking at these playoff teams, like I penciled the Lakers in, Clippers are in, Denver, Utah. Yeah. I think they're fighting for a playoff spot. I think they're in the mix all season. I could actually see them being on the outside looking in just because I think they're just too many good teams. Like, you know, I don't know if Minnesota is better than Houston at the end of the day. I don't know if they're better than Portland. Yeah, I just think it's too tough. They may just miss the playoffs, I'd say.
Yeah, I think that's still where I'm at. I need to see Wiggins sustain this for more than a month, right? That
yes.
It's got to be an all year type of thing. And also, like Jeff Teague, he's been at least showing signs of him on the decline. So if he can maintain that level of play as well, would be a big question mark. Now moving over to a team which has seemed to be getting it slowly together, had a really slow start to the year. That's the Utah Jazz.
Yes.
We were both really high on. Mike Conley forgot how to shoot the first 3-4 games of the season. Bojan Bogdanović was once again a fantastic signing by them. He is putting up similar numbers to that with the Pacers, scoring over 20 points per game, shooting splits of 52 and like 44 right now. He's been a stud. Donovan Mitchell has proven that guy is a stud as well. He's going to be a star in this league. I like what the Utah Jazz have, but were we a little bit too high on them? I guess would be the question, because is it just early season woes with Mike Conley, or is this team not as good as we thought?
So I think Conley, him out of the gates, and like you say, that first 4-game stretch, it was, I knew it reached peak drama when I think Utah was on against, maybe the Warriors or the Lakers. I can't remember. Maybe it was the Lakers. And Mark Jackson had the game, and he was just sort of giving his Mark Jackson coach talking points about, you got to get yourself ready. And this is, you got to just talk to yourself, giving all his platitudes. And you're like, all right, Mark, that's enough. Let's just sit the next couple plays out. But I knew it reached peak like problem when Mark Jackson's talking on the telecast about Mike Conley's woes. And I think him starting out of the gates really slow correlates to how Utah started out. I think I would think Utah of all people were really shocked by just how bad Mike Conley was shooting the ball and just offensively the first week or so of the season. And I think that put a lot of pressure on Donovan Mitchell to produce. I think it put a lot of pressure on other guys to sort of shoulder the scoring load, which they were not necessarily anticipating, I don't think, when they signed Mike Conley. Now, he's steadied since then. I think he's averaging like 12, 13 points a game, throwing a few assists. And he's starting to look more like the Mike Conley from Memphis. I think he's settled in a bit more with the Jazz. But I don't know. Well, I don't know if we had him too high. I think we were expecting more. I think basketball fans were expecting more from Utah. I mean, I don't think we necessarily had them in the finals per se. But it's a start that I don't think anyone was expecting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to put it. It's not the start everyone was anticipating.
What are they sitting? 4-3 right now? Eighth in the West?
Yeah, with some shaky losses. haven't looked as dominant yet. They have tough losses against the Kings. The Clippers is an understanding loss. They lost to the Lakers as well. They also did beat the Clippers, so I should say that's like a toss-out. But, yeah, I mean, they play the Philadelphia 76ers on Wednesday and the Milwaukee Bucks on Friday.
Ooh, that's a tough swing, yeah.
Well, a tough swing, but also I think we'll better know what this team is following those two games, right? They put up good showings, then I feel more confident about the Utah Jazz. If they put up some clunkers, then I think we can start to wonder that maybe this team, they have some question marks still to be had.
What do you think about Gobert so far?
Doesn't feel like he's just a very limited player offensively.
Yes.
Fantastic rim protector. But again, a guy who can only do stuff by dunking the ball, doesn't have a post game, doesn't have like a post hook or a post fade. It's dunking the ball and setting good screens. Like, I just think it's easy to take a guy like that out of your offense or defense. The fact he only shoots 65% from the field so far this year, I haven't been wowed by him. He's only averaging one block per game. So if he's not even giving you the elite level rim protection you're accustomed to, then right. Rudy Gobert is way under the ceiling. And he hurts this team if he's not as good. And also, they just suffered an Ed Davis injury where he has a fractured fibula. So he's going to be right. missing some time, which is going to be
significant time. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how that comes together. But it was good for the fact that Mike Conley, a couple of games ago, did have 29 points. But then again, against the Clippers last night, he had just 8 once again. So he's got to get it together. Him shooting 31% from the field, 28% from three, that's not what we anticipate from Mike Conley. And if this Jazz team is going to be as good as advertised, Mike Conley's got to be the clear cut, like, second best player on this team.
I agree. Well, yeah.
You think? Well, or does he just have to be a top three player on the team?
I think he's gonna be top three because I still say Gobert's got to be the guy after Mitchell, and then Conley can be okay at three. Can't be worse.
Bogdanovich is
can't be worse than three in my opinion.
Right, and Bogdanovich is gonna has got to be four. I would even say Gobert doesn't even have to be third. I would say you need Mitchell and Conley to be one and two, and Bogdanovich to be three, because Bogdanovich is your steady three-point shooter on this team. That's the guy you can rely on to get you a three-point shot. And I would say Rudy Gobert, yeah, you're relying on him. Maybe he's the second most impactful player you need. But on the offensive end, you don't want Rudy Gobert to be your third best player. I don't think you need
him to be your best player. That's right.
So maybe just me taking a different angle on it. But, yeah. So we'll see how that develops. I do want to talk about another team which had high expectations going into the year, and they haven't been so impressive either, and that's the Denver Nuggets.
Yes.
Nikola Jokic. Players are shooting 80% when guarded by Nikola Jokic.
Yes.
He's a bad defender. He's also just like not – he was looked really in shape during FIBA. It was like one of the talking points of how he looked slimmed down. It looked like they lost, and he was like, all right, where are the bonbons and the Twinkies? I need to put on some weight. Right. Doesn't look that great out there. Hasn't been a huge part of the offense scoring-wise. Like I think he's taking less than 10 shots per game so far to start the year, which doesn't seem beneficial for what the Denver Nuggets want to be. And, of course, you know, him not being able to stop anybody defensively has been an issue. Jamal Murray still looks inconsistent. Doesn't look like he took a jump. Gary Harris kind of looks like he is what he is now. It looked like he was going to be promising to be 100%. Like a real big 3-and-D player, but he's kind of plateaued. The biggest bright spot is the fact that Michael Porter Jr. is finally playing. He had a very nice debut. Can definitely get his shot off the dribble, so maybe he's a big impact player going forward. But the Denver Nuggets look like they haven't gotten better. It's probably my biggest takeaway through, you know, 5-6 games, is that they look like they're, if not the same team as last year, maybe slightly worse.
Yeah, I would say slightly worse. I mean, they're sitting sitting fifth in the conference right now, 4-2. Got swings. I think they got Philly coming up next, and then a game against Timberwolves. We were just talking about them. Will not be a cakewalk for sure. Who else they got going? They got Philly's 76ers, Miami Heat. Sorry. Yeah. They got Miami Heat Tuesday, 76ers, and then Timberwolves. So that's a pretty, two home games and then going to Minnesota. Sitting fifth in the division right now, fifth in the conference. Jokic getting splits of, I think, like 15 and 10 right now and 6 assists. So steady stat line, not something you would expect, I think, from an MVP candidate, someone that people had very high on the list last year. Coming into this season, I think folks had him as a top five candidate for the MVP. Is a literal human sieve on defense. It is astounding how bad Jokic is on defense, which never really been a great individual defender. One-on-one defense has never been his strong suit. But one thing that was always sort of pointed out about his game was he was a great team defender, worked well within the system, and you could sort of hide him on defense, and, you know, he wasn't, you know, Akeem Olajuwon on defense, but he wasn't this bad. Right now it's just, I mean, it's a layup line on Jokic on defense. I agree with your point on Gary Harris. I think kind of where we are with Gary Harris, I don't know if his ceiling's much higher than what he's kind of playing at right now. You might have the Gary Harris podium game every now and again, but I think for the most part this is kind of his game, which is not bad to be sure, but I think the thought process was that he would ascend and you'd kind of have this sort of organic big three between he, Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. Murray's, I think, not been consistent so far. They've managed 4 wins, even with him not being sort of, at his best offensively and as consistently as they'd like him to be. Now, we said Utah, we kind of had high hopes for them, but didn't expect them to be in the West Conference Finals. Denver was a team that many people named as a team that would win probably the most games in the conference, probably lock up the number one seed in the playoffs, and at least be in the Western Conference Finals against a team from LA, either the Clippers or the Lakers. So them sitting fifth right now and not looking very impressive, I will say that is a shock for NBA fans right now. Now, again, caveat, of course, super duper early, but still, I would have not had them sitting, you know, fifth place in the conference right now.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It almost feels like, I don't know if there's a move to be had. I know that Bradley Beal's a guy that was talked about a lot in the offseason after, which I think would have been the ideal kind of guy to get. I mean, I guess you have to hope that defense just kind of falls back into like DNA where they start maybe more minutes for a guy like Jeremy Grant. I like what Paul Millsap gives this team, but I think Paul Millsap is clearly on the back half of his career. It'd be interesting to see how Denver, you know, maneuvers these next few weeks. I think we need to see some more consistency on the offensive end, and we just need to see some life on the defensive end.
Well, it's weird because the offense was their calling card, right? Denver was a great passing team, scoring and sharing the ball. And they thought that's why one of the reasons Bradley Beal seemed like such a great fit, because he could fit in with offensively how they moved the ball, how they got open shots. I mean, that was their calling card. I mean, the defense is one thing, put that aside for a second, but that they're struggling offensively is a bit of a shocker, because I thought that was the thing that they were sort of known for and the thing that they could do. They can get out and score, they can get out and find open shots. And right now, it's not happening. And I think that starts with Jokic just not being there. And there have been some conversations about sort of how he looks physically. In the summer, I thought he looked great, but trying to show up to camp, and that's a big boy. You know what I mean? That's a big dude. So,
yeah, a team to watch for sure. And now, before we wrap this episode up, one team I do want to touch on, we mentioned them on our West Coast pod about who they lost to, but the Dallas Mavericks, led by Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis, they look like a playoff team. Luka Doncic looks like a future star. We had the awesome moment between him and LeBron James following their overtime loss to the Lakers, in which LeBron was like, "You're a bad motherfucker." And I think anytime the best player, one of the best players of all time, gives you that kind of compliment after going head to head for an overtime matchup, it just speaks volumes of like, you're coming, like you got next. And I think the Mavericks have shown at every turn so far this year that they are that team. I know that some people have kind of mocked Porzingis in the sense where I think you might find this funny. People are like, Porzingis is like any guy who is 7 foot tall and can kind of play basketball but has zero touch or feel for the game. Because he's just not great. There, I think it may also just be the fact that he hasn't played professional basketball in over a year and a half. Right. So I think there is some fine tuning still going on there. But their supporting cast hasn't been as bad as I thought they were going to be. Doncic is a stud. Jack dropped a stat on me last night that he is the first player in NBA history to have back-to-back games at the age of 20 with a triple-double, in which he had over 20 points and over like 15 assists in the game. Nice. So he's been balling. Yeah, two back-to-back triple-doubles, now has 11 in his career at the age of 20. You've been impressed by the Dallas Mavericks?
You know what? I have. And we had a discussion a few weeks ago when we were doing the previews, and we were talking about teams that we want on League Pass. And you were steadfast with the Dallas Mavericks. And that's when we had a discussion about the Mavericks or the New Orleans Pelicans. And I got to say, the Mavericks are fun to watch. Luka Doncic's game, man, it is just that guy, to borrow a phrase, that guy fucks. And he is amazing to watch. Porzingis, I'm not as down on him as other people. Like you say, I hadn't played basketball in literally 2 years, and I think he looks okay out there. I mean, yeah, he's still, I think, working his mobility, working his basketball, you know, basketball shape, and just getting a feel for the court. You can't simulate that. You can only get that through playing. So given all the circumstances, I think related to his injury and him get back on the court, I think he looks fantastic. I mean, he's fine. Excuse me. But they're fun to watch. I keep being convinced that Seth Curry has been signed because his last name is Curry. I mean, he's not just knocking down shots like I would like. I mean, I think there were a couple opportunities in that Lakers game where Seth Curry could have sort of put the nail in the coffin on the Lakers and just missed on some of those opportunities, which happens, but that he was so highly sought after in the offseason was strange to me. I mean, it's perplexing. But I could just be a Curry hater, so that's all that is. But the Mavericks are fun. I like watching them. I think that division is there for the taking. I think they can do battle with the Rockets. I think, you know, they have a little more star power than the Spurs do. Rick Carlisle is an NBA championship coach. The Mavericks have been a pleasant surprise. They've been fun. I never really watched a lot of Doncic's game last season, and I'm catching up on him this year. Dude can ball, man. He's impressive, I gotta say.
Yeah, one of the guys that me and Jack, for sure, we had a penciled in as 39th on our top 50. He's already jumped at least 20 spots up, it feels like. He's clearly playing as a top 30 guy, I think. It's just about sustaining it. But there is a level of confidence to his game that is unprecedented at his age. Yeah, it's definitely a team to watch. I think you make a good point. Their division is definitely up for the take. For example, Houston Rockets not being so good to this point in time, the Spurs just being steady but not having necessarily that star power to take the next jump. The Mavericks are in a really good position. I think also there's still a move to be had, right? Maybe they don't make it this year. Maybe they go out through a free agent this offseason, even though this free agent, this upcoming free agent market isn't as glorious as years past. Right. But it feels like they're just like one guy away, like a knockdown 3-point shooter, more than likely, is what this team is lacking.
Yes, I would say so. I'd probably also throw in a little more on the defensive end. Maybe you get sort of who's my guy? The like 7'7" dude.
Boban from the.
Boban, yeah, he's a Maverick now, isn't he? Boban, yeah. Marjan, yeah. So. You know, I don't mind Dwight Powell. He's okay. Who's my guy? Maxi.
Kleber.
Yeah. Decent, but I would love to just see maybe if you get a guy that's really a sort of a Dwight Howard type.
Feels like they should have kept DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, ironically, right? Like that. Like, that's the guy. Like,
obviously, that's the guy they traded to get Porzingis, but it feels like that type of center they're missing.
That's the skill set. Yeah. That's who they need. Exactly. That's the skill set they need.
I guess the possibility is too, you know, with the Thunder and Rockets in the situations that they're in, you know, the Thunder likely could move Gallinari, Chris Paul, or Steven Adams. I don't think Steven Adams or Gallinari would be the worst fits for Dallas. Obviously, Gallo being more of a scoring option, but obviously the defense is what you are going to be losing with him. Adams can kind of do it all. And like, if the Rockets want to mix it up, you know, maybe there's a world where Clint Capella kind of ends up in Dallas, which I don't think is necessarily the answer, but he gives you similar to what a guy like DeAndre Jordan gives you in rebounding and rim protection.
And I think that's what they need. I think they got a lot of shooters. I mean, gosh, Gallinari, if he ended up there, that'd be just like the all Euro squad, right? That's a lot of Lamborghinis and, you know, CK1 cologne. But man, that's totally racist, but it's okay because they're Eastern European. I mean, you know, hey. But that's right. I think Capella, DeAndre Jordan, skill set, rebounder. You know, hate to do this, high motor, air quotes guy, can run, you know, sort of run, jump, and holler, get dunks, get lobs, block shots, protect the rim, and rebound, and sort of hide Porzingis a little bit on defense. Who's not a bad defender, by the way. He's actually pretty solid on the defensive end. But yeah, I think that's a piece that the Mavericks, that and just knockdown shooting, because I don't think Seth Curry is that. I just don't. I don't know if I'm the only one that thinks that.
Yeah, he only plays 20 minutes per game for a reason. Right.
Yeah.
He's kind of like a Kyle Korver, Doug McDermott in the class of I can go out there and I can knock down a couple threes for you. But if you're expecting me to play a boatload of minutes and play a defense, you're probably in trouble.
Probably right. We're all in trouble. I'm telling you now that we cannot. Yep. I got you. Yeah. Right. But fun to watch. Nonetheless, I will say they are moving up my league pass rankings besides probably the Pacific Division squads. The Dallas is probably right up there next for me, besides watching the Lakers Clippers and Warriors losses. The Mavericks are probably
going to ask you. So, what are your what have been your three favorite teams to watch through 2 weeks now?
Oh, great question. So Lakers have been fun. Of course, I'm just watching. I'm really liking Dwight Howard, how he's playing right now. I just like him getting out there, and I think he said something in the tank. And whenever you win a championship, I think there's always one guy that you got sort of bargain basement prices. Like, people thought this guy may have been done, and he's still got some elite level contribution, elite level basketball in him. I think Dwight's fitting that mold. You know, like, he's never going to be D12 from Orlando again, but he can be pretty damn good. Sort of like when the Celtics got Bill Walton in the 80s. So it's been fun watching him play and contribute and watching that team come together. Clippers are also a good watch. I'm liking them come together and integrate Kawhi Leonard into the mold. Dallas has been fun, super fun, just fun games, especially when those games are at American Airlines Arena. Those are great to watch. I've been catching Miami Heat games since Jimmy Butler's been back. They've been fun. Atlanta Hawks, I didn't think I'd catch so many Hawks games. Just great atmosphere with that team. This is prior to Trae Young going down, but still caught a couple of their games. And then I'm oddly intrigued, and maybe they've been on TV more than I've realized, but I've been watching more Nets, and I'm probably brainwashed by Nick and Jack, but I've caught the Nets. I've been following the Nets a little bit just to see how this experiment is going to work out. So those are probably my top five right now.
Yeah. So my top five, Pacers have been one. I've watched every Pacers game to this point in time. Number two would be the Lakers. There's still something obviously fun in watching LeBron James in year 17 do what he does, the Anthony Davis duo. And then 3, 4, and 5 get interesting. So I think third for me has been the Pelicans, oddly enough. They're on TV a lot, not winning a lot of games yet, but the style of play and the pace they play with, it's just really fun basketball. I mean, the game moves quick. There's a lot of points going up. I've enjoyed watching that Lakers core, now Pelicans young core, and Lonzo, Ingram, and even Josh Hart has been really good for them. So I'm enjoying that. Unfortunately, we haven't seen Zion yet. I can only imagine that helping their watchability is adding a guy like Zion. So I've enjoyed watching the Pelicans. And then as my fourth team, probably the Miami Heat. I've enjoyed the Jimmy Butler transition into the Heaters. Their bench depth is extremely eye-catching. And then my fifth team, the fifth team's questionable. It'd probably be a toss-up to me between the Dallas Mavericks and the Clippers. But I've definitely watched more Dallas Mavericks games at this point in time than the Clippers, I think. So I'd say Dallas would be my fifth team.
Yep.
It's been fun. I'm really looking forward to how the season continues to progress, man. I mean, there's been so much action already in 2 weeks, and we still have, what, like 30 weeks left?
Quick question for you. Who's a team you absolutely have not watched? You're like, hard pass. I just don't. I mean, I'll read about it in the paper tomorrow. Like, who's the – you're like, nope, I can't.
Just wait, can't do it. What's the question?
Who's a team that you have not watched? You're like, nope, to hell with this. I'm not wasting – I'll read about it on ESPN.com tomorrow. Like, who's the team?
Watched a single New York Knicks minute yet.
Are you serious?
Watched a single minute. I have seen highlights of Jason Tatum hitting a game winner over the Knicks. Sure. I think that's the most Knicks content I've absorbed this year.
Wow.
And Fizdale yesterday, when reporters were pressing on him saying, you're playing RJ Barrett a lot of minutes in a blowout loss. Are you going to consider playing him less? And Fizdale was like, bro, Latrice Sprewell averaged 42 minutes one season. This dude's 19 years old, pretty much telling the reporter to shut the hell up. I'm going to run my rotation like I want to, which I think will probably get him fired at some point this year, because I don't think the way he's handled the point guard situation between Dennis Smith Jr., Frank Ntilikina, and Elfrid Payton has been good. Too much time for Elfrid Payton, probably. But yeah, I haven't watched a lot of New York Knicks basketball. I haven't been able to get into it. And also, to the same light, I have not watched the Charlotte Hornets yet either.
Really? They've been kind of fun.
I know that they've had, I mean, I know the opening night or their first game, they had a franchise record in points.
Wow, no Charlotte. I haven't watched a ton of Charlotte. I watched some. But yeah, the Knicks is shocking. The Knicks, I mean, it's the Knicks.
So what's your team? What's the team that you have given zero run time to?
OKC. I'm sorry. I love you, but no.
I've watched OKC for the first time yesterday, actually. So it's not like I've watched a ton. Right. Yesterday was my first full in-depth watch. They played the Pelicans, funny enough. And I will say that, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a stud in the making. Definitely got a good one back in the Paul George trade. And Chris Paul, kind of like, you kind of forget Chris Paul's on the court with the Thunder, which is very interesting, which kind of makes me think he doesn't get traded this year, because at the age of 34, with the amount of money he's making, if he's already a guy who you don't really feel out there, even though he had 12-9, but again, you know, 12 points, 9 assists, 2 steals. I mean, it's solid in a win, obviously, but that's not a guy I'm trading for who's making $44 million a year.
Yep, I agree with you. Also, sorry, one last one. Also, I don't catch a lot of Memphis Grizzly basketball.
Yeah, I haven't watched them either this year. I think the only highlight I've seen is the Jay Crowder game winner over the Nets.
Right. Right.
And actually, I do want to watch them because I was pretty high on John Morant going into the year. So I definitely need to start catching some of those games. But again, you know, 32 goddamn teams or 30 teams, 30 teams. Right. And it's tough to watch them all. It's tough, man. And when I feel like the nights I run the OTG basketball Twitter, I'm in like frantic mode to try and get as much content throughout the league as possible. Sure. Granted, I watch basketball on 3 screens because I have 2 PC monitors and my TV. So I have 3 games on at all times, but for somehow I keep missing certain teams. And I think it goes without saying why I miss certain teams. Even though I did catch some Suns Memphis actually last night, now that I think about it, before my game crashed. Anyhow, final thoughts, Jay.
Despite what some New York liberals, limousine liberals, think about the state of the NBA basketball season, it has been very fun to watch. I'm enjoying all the storylines. I think there's a right mix of star quality. I think there's a lot of up-and-coming players. I think there's a lot of improved players. I think there's just some really neat sort of incubation experiments going on around the league with some of these teams that we thought might have been just bottom dwellers that are actually showing promise. So early returns on this season, for me anyway, is that it's been everything we thought it would be. I have not been disappointed in the slightest.
I have not been either. The NBA is very fun right now. That is like the most old guy, young at clouds take I've ever seen. And I'm going to continue enjoying this season of basketball for sure. Not until next time. Jay, where can the people find you?
Yeah, please. I mean, come on, man. Let me, the folks can, find me on the Twitter machine, jaychris206, jaychris206. Shout out to the Emerald City, Seattle, where I'll be giving my takes on Twitter, good, bad, and otherwise.
You can follow me on Twitter Twitter and Instagram at KWAL Hoops, KWAL Hoops. Be sure to follow along with the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Blog Talk Radio, or head straight to OTGBasketball.com, which, as I said earlier, has the greatest, latest up-and-coming content out there. If you're looking for merchandise, we have Fear the Beard and Brody shirts, Got Length Milwaukee Bucks shirts. We have Spidey and Friends, which is a Utah Jazz play on Donovan Mitchell and that big three out there in Utah. We have Kawhi Leonard, the Cyborg shirts. For all those shirts and many more, head to dsgntree.com/off-the-glass. And until next time, peace out, knuckleheads.